One of the most important questions, which I think it must constantly keep in mind, is this. What is the price that we do have to pay for these efforts, governmental and otherwise, to maintain security and to ensure loyalty? We're paying a price in a good many different ways.
Yes, it's a very high price from time to time. Might I just mention the price that has been paid and is being paid by certain individuals? Many individuals in the United States have been accused of being disloyal. There has been no satisfactory proof that would stand up in a court of law in most cases leveled against them. They find themselves with damaged reputation. They find the possibility of securing additional other employment or satisfactory employment much more difficult than they expected. Their whole lives are changed as a result of this. Of course, we may say that it is true that young men are being killed in Korea, too, and we shouldn't be too sensitive about a few individuals. However, the boys in Korea are being killed by the enemy. In the United States, the reputations are being destroyed by people who claim to be the most ardent supporters of the American way of life.
Then, too, there is the price we're paying in the area of government. We live in a difficult time. Our government must be strong and vigorous and efficient. We need able personnel in government. And yet it's quite clear that the emphasis that has been put in recent years upon loyalty and security is making it difficult to procure able men for government service. We need in the government service men who have imaginations and curiosity, who are tough-minded, and yet loyalty tends to persuade these employees to play things safe, to think no unusual thoughts, to have no dangerous associations, to read no radical books. The effect, I think, at the level of government personnel can prove to be very serious indeed in these years ahead as we face these serious problems.
And also, along exactly a similar line, the whole effect of this loyalty hysteria, which is what I believe it is to make people in all walks of life play it safe. Think nothing original, nothing new. This is true of our private universities, our state universities. We expect our universities and our colleges to originate new ideas, to train our youth in original thinking and logical thinking. And this, I think, is quite impossible if all the time the professor and the administrative officer has to worry about being accused of being a communist because he expresses an idea which perhaps isn't exactly in agreement with something that someone else in the community thinks. You see, this thing spreads away from communism, away from sabotage, away from being a traitor, into being merely different from what someone else would like to have you be. I think that there has been a very damaging effect upon our universities in the last years because of this hysteria.
And above all, it seems to me we're paying a price in terms of loss of national unity, a sense of strength. We've allowed all of this emphasis upon loyalty to persuade us that we are weak when we are actually strong. We've allowed it to persuade us that our government is honeycombed with dangerous, subversive people. We've let one group of the people be stirred up against another group of the people.
We've lost a faith. What you are saying, Carr.
That's right.
We've lost a faith in each other to begin with.
You know, it's been suggested again and again along the way that in the background of all of this loyalty and security program, there may really be a full-fledged communist. That if an international communist had been given the assignment of somehow sowing seeds of dissension and disunity in the United States, that he couldn't very well have thought up anything more diabolically clever than what has been taking place in view of the loss of faith that you mentioned in view of the dissension and spirit of disunity which has been created.
Every country such as ours that subscribes to the democratic tradition of Western Europe and the United States needs to have a loyal opposition in government and in public. And the opposition should always be regarded as loyal. It isn't that we here plead for a traitorous element. We plead only that those who disagree with the majority should always have the privilege of disagreeing. And it is this fundamental right to disagree with the majority that is threatened by this sort of thing. I often think that we are going over to a place where we regard anonymous informers as reliable. A police state doesn't consist of a large number of policemen on the corners. It consists of the police listening to anonymous informers, where every citizen of the country is a potential spy on every other citizen of the community, and the police will punish whoever is accused anonymously. And this sort of thing, to a certain extent, has been practiced in recent years during what I regard as the security hysteria of these recent years.
Oh, we do pay a price. There's no question of that. Now, the Nimitz Commission, it seems to me, must also ask itself the question, to what extent has our security program actually been protecting us?
Well, scientifically, very little, to tell the truth. It's very difficult to tell scientific secrets. It is true that we will have some traitors. If you run a large operation, you will have some of these. You should try to avoid them if you possibly can. But I'd like to appeal to our fellow citizens to realize that it is very, very difficult to tell scientific facts. It takes a very intelligent person to understand scientific facts. He must be highly trained. And moreover, scientific things are in their nature very difficult to conceal, on the other hand. If a person is determined to learn some scientific fact, you cannot prevent him from learning it for himself. Thus, the chemistry that takes place in the United States and in the USSR is precisely the same. An intelligent person will get exactly the same answers from nature if he wants to ask them. The geology of this country tells the story of the past history of the Earth. It also tells it from the rocks in Russia. You can't prevent the Russians from learning this, and the Russians can't prevent us from learning it. And the uranium atom behaves just exactly the same on the two sides of the Iron Curtain. And if intelligent man asks questions of it, it will get precisely the same answers. It is difficult, let me repeat, it is difficult to tell scientific facts to people. But it is almost impossible to prevent people from learning them themselves if they wish to.
It's also clear, Yuri, I think, from the evidence that we've accumulated, that congressional investigations and the executive loyalty program cannot provide us with complete security. One of the things the House Un-American Activities Committee has done, for example, is to build up a file. 1 million names, we're told, of individuals who are regarded as, in some sense, dangerous or potentially dangerous. And yet, a short time ago, when the chemist in Philadelphia, Harry Gold, was arrested and charged with espionage, it was discovered that his name was not in that list of 1 million. Somewhat later, Representative Nixon, a member of the Un-American Activities Committee, complained in the House of Representatives that the existing loyalty program would not have caught Alger Hiss at the time he was a member of the Department of State.
Not only not catch him, but as a matter of fact, no loyalty oath would ever make the traitor loyal anyhow, would it?
That's the point. I can't see that any possible loyalty program we might devise, however efficient could be, would find the hidden, truly dangerous, subversive espionage agent in the government service. Now, at the same time, I think we've probably got to concede that in this world in which we live, we do need a security program, that we do have a security problem. We just can't get away from it. But I think we've got to keep in mind that there are certain fundamentals of democracy here that must never be forgotten as we go about the business of devising a satisfactory loyalty program. For example, we've got to recognize the ordinary fact that we can never completely eliminate the possibility of risk. Risk exists in the very nature of the case. We can be as certain as anything can be that there are going to be some espionage agents active in the next decade. It seems to me important that we not tear the house down in an attempt to eliminate, finally, all possible risk. That just can't be done.
Yes, we shouldn't burn the house down to get a few rats. It's another way of saying precisely the same thing. We ought to remember that it is important to keep in mind again what we are trying to defend, the American way of life, as we often call it. The right to be accused in public of crimes, to be a right to a fair and open trial, the right to be faced by our accusers, the right to be regarded as innocent until proved guilty, and that unusual and inhuman punishment should not be meted out. These things we must keep in mind while we hunt for a good security program.
Yes, we've got to have that good security program. We've got to have congressional investigating committees, probably. We've got to have loyalty programs. But however much we succeed in perfecting this program, we should also keep in mind that a good loyalty program is necessarily a negative approach to this problem. We also need to move ahead in terms of trying to maintain our national security in a positive way. Our great basic security here, it seems to me, is our democratic faith, our long-standing tradition of democracy. We must try to perfect our democracy, put our best foot forward, to lead from strength and not from weakness. We've come a great way. I would be the last person in the world to minimize the importance of the success we've achieved in democracy. And yet we do have imperfections. in our democratic system, and I think we need to concentrate upon perfecting our democracy, and that would be a positive approach which ought to accompany this negative approach.
I agree, and I really think that we should leave the security program in the hands of the regular investigating agencies such as the FBI and the prosecution agencies of the governments and courts. Informers and informants are no good. Laws should be made to punish saboteurs and traitors. In closing, I should like to say that I would like to repeat what I said at the very beginning. I believe that we are leading from strength in this problem. I think the future belongs to us, and that if we will only remember that we are in essentially strong position, we have the correct view of what a government should be. We have the correct regard for the rights of human beings.
Yes,
and if we will only keep to this, our chances of winning out are very strong indeed.
Let's overcome this sense of terror that we seem to have picked up in recent years. We have a problem. I would be the last person to minimize it. But let us remember the great strength of our nation. Let us carry on with our democratic traditions. Let the rest of the world see what a strong nation we have, what our way of life is like.
Taking part in today's University of Chicago Roundtable on National Security and Individual Freedom were Governor Adlai Stevenson of Illinois, Francis Biddle, lawyer and formerly Attorney General of the United States, Robert Carr, political scientist of Dartmouth College and Executive Secretary of the President's Committee on Civil Rights, and Harold C. Urey, Nobel Prize winner and atomic scientist of the University of Chicago. Alan Simpson, Chairman of the Board of Radio of the University of Chicago, served as host. The printed pamphlet of today's University of Chicago Roundtable program, the anniversary program, contains the full text of the discussion. And in celebration of the 20th anniversary of the Roundtable's first program, February 1st, 1931, a special anniversary pamphlet is also available to you and your friends. This special pamphlet contains excerpts from all the important roundtables in which Chancellor Robert M. Hutchins has participated. You will want copies of this pamphlet and will want to read these statements by Chancellor Hutchins presented during the last 20 years. Individual copies of today's discussion are 10 cents in coin, and copies of the anniversary pamphlet are 5 cents each. Or a copy of the special anniversary pamphlet will be sent to you free with each year's subscription to the Roundtable pamphlet. Send $3 to the University of Chicago Roundtable, Chicago 37, Illinois, and receive copies of the Roundtable pamphlet for the next 52 weeks. I'll repeat the address, the University of Chicago Roundtable, Chicago 37, Illinois. Today's program originated from Station WRC in Washington and Station WMAQ in Chicago and came to you in part by transcription. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.